Welcome to the show, friends, and welcome to what I have called for many years the School of Clear Thinking Christianity. And I haven't said that in a long time, but it's still the same. This is what I've in the, what, is this 31 years now we're into with this program? I think so. We started February 1990. This is 2021. So this would be, yeah, like 31 years. And glad to be here with you, to talk with you, and to hopefully have an impact on you for thoughtful Christianity, what I like to call Christianity worth thinking about. And I'm Greg Kokel, your host. Thank you for being part of the show. And if you just listen and don't call, you are still part of the show as far as I'm concerned, because my goal is to give you a piece of my mind, and hopefully that will have a salutary effect on you. And if you'd like to call me and be part of the show in that way, you can give me a piece of your mind. And that number is 855-243-9975. If you are outside of the U.S., you can dial 562, I guess you dial 1 for the international code, and 562-424-8829. And before I forget, because I often forget these things and I kick myself afterwards, I'm actually going to be going out of town this week, a rare occurrence lately, and just to keep in mind, if you'd like me or any of our team to come to speak for you, we have a fairly open schedule right now, whether it's Jonathan Noyes or Alan Schliemann or Tim Barnett, if you're north of the Canadian border, because I still think he can't get out of Canada. He may not even be able to get out of Ontario. I don't know. But or have me come out. Just give us a call. I actually send us a note at Darcy, D-A-R-C-Y, at str.org, and Darce will take care of you. But I will be in Pennsylvania this weekend for an all-day Saturday conference, and I mean like 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. I guess they start with the gut wash and belly, let's see, gut bombs and belly wash. Get that right. Gut bombs and belly wash at 8 a.m. to get people going. What is gut wash? Maybe it's the same, belly bombs. Same difference, right? And then at 9, I start my sessions on tactics, and I go till 3 with the teaching, and then from 3 to 4 is Q&A, and we'll have Q&A mixed in. I love these kinds of sessions. Incidentally, it'll be at Living Water Community Church in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. So if you're within striking distance of Harrisburg, love to see you on that Saturday. And I don't have the contact information, but should be pretty easy to find. Living Water Community Church in Harrisburg online, and all day on Saturday for that conference. I love these kinds of sessions because generally they're smaller. I mean, maybe 50 to 150 people. I stand on the floor by the people. I'm not up on a stage, characteristically. So I'm close. It's an interactive kind of style, and we can go slowly through the game plan and some other concerns to help the team, the group of people there, really get a sense of how the tactical game plan works. So I'm looking forward to my time Saturday, April 10th, coming up here at Living Water Community Church in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, all day, starting at 8 for signups. 9, we start the teaching, go to 4. So I'm looking forward to meeting with my friends there and maybe with you. All right, just so you know. Now, this morning, Amy and I did 3 episodes of STR Ask, and I want to talk to you about some questions that came up and during one of them, because if you listen to STR Ask, which it would be hashtag STR Ask, I hope you do, because it's Amy and me with our combined effort to respond to your questions that you put on Twitter or any place for that matter, of Twitter length or tweet length, with the phrase or the word or the moniker hashtag STR Ask in it somewhere, and she'll find it, and then we'll hopefully deal with it during one of our hashtag STR Asks sessions. And excuse me. So this morning we had a couple of questions that dealt with gender and gender appellations. In other words, how you acknowledge a person's gender, or nowadays their preferred gender. And I want to talk a little bit about it. I hope you listened to the STRS because Amy and I are working together on these things. But there were some things that came up to me now that during that I'd never really thought of before, and partly because this issue is coming up so much lately. And it's not just a matter of being nice to people and using names and pronouns that they're comfortable with or that fit their gender identity. There's a much bigger issue going on. And for the very first time, I saw this issue in light of Romans 1. The issue broadly is a redefinition of reality that is grounded on what's inside a person and not what is outside of the person. Truth grounded in what is inside of a person is called relativism. Truth grounded in what's outside of a person is objectivism. God's world is out there. God's morality is out there. And I have argued in a recent Solid Ground, that if we are not allowed to live according to truth, if truth isn't the thing that governs us, it's going to be someone's power that governs us, and this is not a good thing. And we see this going on in our culture right now, and I have been writing a series of Solid Grounds that you can find at str.org, and if you don't get that digitally or through snail mail, go to str.org. Look in the upper right-hand corner. It says subscribe and hit the button and follow the prompts. I want to send this stuff to you. I labor over this because I want to mentor you as to what is going on in the culture that is contrary to God and Christianity and equip you to stand tall and faithful to Christ in the midst of the oppression that is mounting against Christianity. Because what is being pressed against us now is a whole different view of reality, where God is not the center, God out there, the external world, his truth, but rather the internal desires of each individual. And that's not truth at all. That is no kind of truth. Those are desires, but it's no kind of truth. People say it's my truth or personal truth. This is a distortion of the word. Once we start living by one's own personal truth, then it is the ones who are in power who get to define what is true for them and for the rest of us and comply and that's not the right word, enforce us, compel us to comply to their understanding of what's good and true, which is all internal, not external. They're not interested in that. What they're interested in is internal, and this is the spirit of the age, in which we find the conversations about gender pronouns, and it's not unusual now for people to be asked, "What is your preferred pronoun?" Especially in certain circles, younger circles, in a university, school, and when there's more Zoom meetings going on because people are at home quite a bit still, you're able to post your preferred pronoun, or if you're in a school situation, maybe you're required to put your preferred pronoun by your name so people can properly address you, okay, or refer to you. This is all part of a bigger thing. This is not about being nice to people. Because if you don't comply, then those people who are interested in this are not nice to you. It's not about being nice. It's really about enforcing a larger view of reality. And what occurred to me for the first time today as I was talking with Amy on the air on STRask, #STRask, is that this is also kind of captured in the description of rebellious humanity that Paul offers in Romans chapter 1. Because remember, in verse 18, he starts out by saying, "The wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness." So what we have is a suppression of truth because of unrighteous motives. And I've always thought of this in moral terms. They suppress the moral truth. And in so doing, they are ungodly and unrighteous. But verse 19 says, but that which is known about God is evident within them, for God made it evident to them, for since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so that they are without excuse. Notice that God's character is exhibited in what has been made. It is the truth, the external truth of God and his character, as evidenced by the external truth of the objective realm that he created. And all of this stuff with the gender confusion, let me just put it that way, and I don't mean gender confusion by those individuals who are confused for themselves about their own gender. I mean the entire culture is confused, because what they are doing is suppressing the truth that gender and sex are not two separate things. They are synonyms. Now, there are people that have a gender identity that may not be consistent with their gender or their sex, because their gender identity is something internal, whereas their sex or gender is something external. But I'm not even comfortable with gender identity, though I think it's appropriate to make these kinds of distinctions, because that begins to play into the hands of those who want to locate reality in one's identity, in their psychological state. And so it's suppressing the truth of the outside world for the truth of the inside world. And that's what's being asked. Even if you were male and you respond by saying my preferred gender is male, you are speaking accurately in that you are male, but if you respond to that particular challenge or that request, you are giving way to this other way of thinking. What is your preferred gender? And this is why I recommend a very simple way of responding. And I've written about this in A Solid Ground that's coming out in May. If you go to the website, you sign up, and you're not receiving it, you'll get it. Okay? I want you to get this stuff. It's free. And virtually every book that I've ever written has been largely a collection of solid grounds that I put together into book form, whether it's Tactics or Story of Reality or Relativism or whatever, and others. I mean, it's good stuff, in my view. If you like the books, you'll like Solid Ground, but you'll get them for free on a regular basis, because it'll help equip you to be a better ambassador for Christ in this world, which is not just going its own way, but it is demanding that you go with them, which is why they're requiring, in some cases, for you to self-identify with a preferred pronoun. What is it? Now, here's what I suggested in Solid Ground that's coming out in May, and I'll just mention it now. If somebody were to ask me, what is your preferred pronoun, I would say, I don't have a preferred pronoun. I have a sex. I am male. That's it. That's all I have to say. But what I'm doing when I say that is I'm saying no to the system. I'm saying no to their view of reality they're trying to press on me. I'm saying no to the way they're understanding what's important and what is real. It doesn't matter what I have as a preferred pronoun. What matters is what I am, not what I prefer. And notice here the effort that is to drive the discussion back to the features of the real world and not just to fight psychological features of my own. And that's the battle. And by the way, this is the battle that goes all the way back to the beginning. Genesis chapter 3, that's the nature of the fall, where human beings said no to God and his truth and his external reality and said yes to their own desires. They went from objectivism to relativism, and this is the way it's been ever since. the fight against reality out there because we don't like it. And so we're going to create our own reality, our own set of rules, where we're in charge and God is not. That's a false world. But it is the world being imposed upon us. And now I am losing confidence, frankly, for myself, of really making a big difference in changing the flow of the culture and the direction it's going. I'm not that big. I'm not that important. I don't have that large a bully pulpit. I'm not that influential. And that's okay. But what I aim to do, though, is to be here for you, if you're a follower of Christ, or for another individual who isn't, to help them see for themselves the foolish direction this world is going in, and to invite them to consider reality, in which God is in charge, and a world that he made in a very particular way, which entails, by the way, that we haven't been living according to that way that he wants the world, which means we're in trouble. But there is a rescue plan. And so I have hope for individuals, but not for the whole system. And so my efforts as a Christian, never mind my role at Stand to Reason, but just as a follower of Jesus like you, my role is not to change the culture, but is to stand firm in the truth, even when the culture is trying to force me to deny what's the reality right before my eyes. And in many of these situations, you don't have to be a philosopher or an apologist or a theologian. All you have to do is be a common sense, ordinary human being, and you could see what is sound. It comports with common sense. And this whole gender thing is an example of that. So this is a place where I think we need to begin to make a stand as followers of Christ. And the stand, again, isn't to persuade other people that they're wrong and we're right, but rather to insist that other people not demand that we live according to a lie in something that matters. And this matters. This matters because it's a part of a much larger package, a much larger worldview that subverts Christianity. And this is why Christians who go against this trend are personas non grata. We're standing in the line of fire. Because at the heart of things, this movement wants to completely subvert Christianity. Now, this sounds like Chicken Little stuff, I realize, to some people, but it's not. It's all you have to do is look at what's going on and you can see it. God made the world a certain way, and the trend now is to deny God's way. To deny God's way, especially in the area of what it means to be human, which is tied also to the notion of gender and human sexuality. And the world's just saying, we want it our way, and you must go along with it. You must affirm our way, and that's the whole thing about using pronouns. Now, I have offered a particular way of approaching this question that has, in a certain sense, evolved over years as we have struggled with this as a team to know how best to deal with these challenges. And I think the place that we settled at, by and large, and I know this may be controversial for some, and people have to make their own decisions. There's a judgment call involved here, but I'll tell you what our view is. When it comes to names, we think it's probably best to call people what they want to be called. Now, there's a couple reasons for this. One of them is that names are conventional and androgynous to some degree. That is, they could be used of men or women. All right? Lots of names are like that, like Pat, for example, or Lynn. But lots of traditionally male names have been picked up by females. Catherine Hepburn used to be called Mike, as I recall. And there are Mikes that are women. So there does seem to be a flexibility here. Plus, and this is a point that Amy made today that was really good, that names are conventional. That is, they are the kinds of things that are subjectively chosen. People choose the names they like or the names that the parents like. There's nothing at stake really here. Maybe a little bit, but not much. And if for the little bit that is at stake with the use of names related to perceived gender or gender identity, if we stick with forcing male names on biological males, even though they have a female gender identity, you know, this isn't going to help anything. It's just going to look mean-spirited. And so, especially when a person's name is what we're using in dealing with that individual, our view basically is just use whatever name they want to be called. However, when referring to that individual in the third person, and this is done when we're talking with others, we don't use third-person pronouns like he or her or him or she when we're talking to the individual in question. They're not usually party to the conversation. We're using it with someone else. We should not be required to use that person's preferred pronoun when referring to them in the third person. Because pronouns aren't subjective. Sex, gender is not subjective. It is objective. It's an objective feature of the world. God made them male and female. That's in the very first book, in the very first chapter. It's pretty foundational. Even Jesus affirmed that in Matthew 19. He talked about marriage and the permanence of marriage. One man with one woman becoming one flesh for one lifetime. So since the he-she part is not a function of culture, it is a function of the nature of reality, then we stick with that if we are going to speak truthfully and not speak lies regarding those kinds of things. Now, this does raise a question. Doing so is going to not only be make you a social pariah in many circles, it can also be dangerous. Because for some people, their jobs are on the line. In fact, this morning when we had two questions regarding this, one person was labeled themselves as anonymous. Now think about that. They're sending a question in to hashtag STRAsk for us to answer. There's no way that anybody listening is going to be able to trace that person. We don't say where they live, what their full name is, what their job is. Their voice isn't on the air. All they do characteristically is give us their first name. That's it. Yet this individual was so frightened at being discovered and then experiencing retribution for their point of view that they named themselves in hashtag STRAsk question as anonymous. This is what I'm talking about. So, in the circumstance where you're being required to use a pronoun, even when talking about the person when they're not there, that is consistent with their preferred gender, I suggest you don't go along with that. Now, advice is cheap. That means it doesn't cost me anything to tell you what to do. You're the one who's got to pay the price for following my advice. And so I'm fully aware of that liability. And I'm sympathetic. You have to choose the hill that you're going to die on. But I want to tell you something. Even though some hills are not worth dying on, some are. And if we are not willing to metaphorically die on any hill, notice that's military metaphor, right? That means we give over the entire battle to the other side. They take it all if we aren't willing to stand firm at some point and simply say no. We are not going there. No. Now keep in mind, the refusal or our position, our firm stand, is not to force them to do something different than they are doing. Our firm stand is to not be conformed to their views, even when they're trying to force us. We just say no. Now, is that going to cost some people their jobs? I'm afraid it will. But if we don't stop at least at genders, where are we going to stop? Little by little, they're taking everything. I'm going to make a prognostication here, and it's a relatively safe one, even though it's going to sound bizarre at first, because these things are already happening in the UK and in Canada, and there are rumblings of it here in this country. That is, if you don't buy into the gender identity issue, and you have children who are minors and under your care that are having dysphoria and want to have a transition to another gender, and you don't let them, this could be construed, and already is being construed in some places, as child abuse. What happens when parents are abusing their children? The state comes in and takes them away. I spent 5 weeks behind the Iron Curtain in 1976 and learned from Christians there who are suffering that their children were taken away from them because they taught them about God. In the minds of the Soviet government, believing in God was a mental illness. And so raising your children to believe in God was harming the children, and that was the justification they had for taking the children away. It is already happening. Alan's keeping a file on it. This is not Chicken Little stuff. This is sober reality. And that's why we've got to say no somewhere. Anyway, you'll be hearing more about this kind of thing, and I hope you get solid ground, and the mentoring letter will be addressing these things there to help you to stand tall, even though sometimes in the line of fire. This whole approach is going to take changes in the local church, how we care for each other. We find kindred spirits in our employment circumstances to work together with, so that we're not alone. It's easier to fire one person than it is to fire 15. But it's going to take the courage of all pulling together to be able to say no to this nonsense, and that's what it is. It is nonsense. All right, let's take a break, and I got plenty of calls on board. Looking forward to talking with you on Stand to Reason.
Have you seen our brand new website? Stop by str.org and enjoy a fresh, clean layout with all the same great content. The new Stand to Reason website was designed with you in mind. It has an easier-than-ever navigation and a crisp, simple layout so you can find all the sound analysis and careful commentary that you've come to expect from us. Browse new features that make finding your favorite resources easier than ever. As always, it's our goal to equip you, our fellow Christians, with the confidence, clear thinking, and courage you need for every encounter you have as a Christian ambassador. Our new website is just one way we're fulfilling that goal, allowing you to access the resources you need in a new and improved way. So visit str.org and keep coming back to discover new podcasts, articles, and videos each and every day.
Have you ever wondered how Stand to Reason is able to produce fresh, accessible content each week? We rely on generous donors so that we can provide you with the tools and tactics you need to be an effective ambassador for Christ. If you've benefited from this podcast or any of our donor-provided resources, including our apps, blog posts, articles, and short videos, consider making a financial contribution to Stand to Reason today. Just visit str.org/donate to show your financial support. It has been an honor providing you with a host of free resources for more than 27 years to help you give voice to the Christian worldview. Help us continue by making a financial gift today at str.org/donate.
right. Listen, if you're not up to speed on realities, we are now. We lost a year, or at least part of the year last year, 2020. So we lost Orange County, we lost Dallas, but we opened up in Seattle. We continued our Minneapolis event. We lost our South thing, but we're picking up in Augusta, South Carolina, coming up in 2022. So let me give you the rundown. And if you want all of the details, you can just go to realityapologetics.com. And for those of you who've never heard of this before, it used to be called Rethink. Now we have a new name for it called Reality. And it's an event that is meant to pass the baton to the next generation, middle schoolers and high schoolers principally, but we're not checking IDs. So whole youth groups are coming, and we've been doing this for a long time in Southern Cal. And last time we had the full one, which is in 2019, we had 2,700 students there attending Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa. So this is a going concern, and those of you who've gone to this, you know it's fabulous. Our best speakers, we throw the ball so you guys can catch it. We just make it accessible and a lot of fun, too. And I'm not in charge of the fun, so because I'm not fun. My daughter's made that really clear. Dad, you're not fun. So we have other people who are more fun in charge of the fun. I have to go along with some of it and do really silly things sometimes on the stage, but everybody else seems to like it. But the key here is you're going to get the best kind of training you can get in a day and a half of a youth conference. We're not going to just throw candy at you. It's not about pizza and pinball or anything like that. It's about solid training to defend the Christian worldview, okay? So we've got coming up here, mark your calendar, SoCal, September 24th and 25th, Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa. We got Seattle area, October 15th and 16th of this year, okay? Mark that if you're in that area. Minneapolis, we're in November 12th and 13th. We've had a fabulous time there. I think we had about 1,300, even with the restrictions last time around. So hopefully this time we'll have no restrictions. We'll really blow out the stops there at Grace Church, Eden Prairie. Then in 2022, we'll be back in Dallas, February 25th and 26th, and we'll be breaking ground in Augusta, South Carolina, April 22nd and 23rd. So we're going full bore, you know, and one of these days maybe we'll open something up in the New England area, but that would be our sixth regional, and then we're done. We're just going to keep pumping those because we want to pass the baton to the next generation. This is the best way we know how to do that. So also, let's see. Oh, we just launched two more courses. And this is on STRU, Stand to Reason University. And one of those courses on the Bible and homosexuality, Alan Schliemann does that. I put together a course on tactics. It's kind of a quickie, but it gives you the basics of the game plan and hopefully wet your whistle. So you want to move on to the more advanced stuff that you can get from here at Stand to Reason, the DVD series from Zondervan, etc. So that's all available. I think we just launched it like a day or a couple days ago, and between the two courses, we have over 300 people that have signed up, and a whole bunch have already finished both courses and are waiting for something new. So check out STRU. Also, homepage, upper right-hand corner, you'll see the icon. Just hit the icon and follow the prompts, and you can do that. So just wanted to make sure I got all of those things in. All right, time to go. Wow, we got a board that is fully lit up here. So let's go to Len in Danville, California. Len, glad to have you on board. Hi.
Hey, Greg, first I want to tell you I love you, brother, and just treasure you and everything you do. Tactics was remarkable for me, Story of Reality. I'm just I'm feeding on your materials, man.
And, glad to hear that.
I wanted to get more advice from you. So I just am finishing up a read-through of the NIV, and I found that easier to read than the King James.
Yes.
I never finished King James, so now I am finishing my NIV, and a friend of mine told me, well, you should buy a Treasury of Scripture Knowledge, and by the way, also get yourself a Hebrew-Greek Keyword Study Bible and a John MacArthur Study Bible, and then just dig in, man, and I'm kind of getting overwhelmed. I'm like, what should I do next?
Well, I would say, look, you don't need the Hebrew and Greek unless you get getting an MDiv, because usually that kind of thing is going to give you just enough to confuse you. You know, these are whole languages.
Okay.
And by just digging in a little to that word or the other word, you end up sometimes falling into what's called the root word error or whatever. So you make more of a word than really the writer intended, because you're digging so deep into the root of it, you know. I mean, sometimes that's valuable, and people who have training in it can use this in a more balanced fashion. But I don't think you need that, to be honest with you. By the way, did you purchase the NIV? Is that the Bible you own, or?
Yes, the Zondervan.
Yes,
NIV,
you know, I know
storyline.
My publisher. I actually have an NIV study Bible that they gave me, and I like it, but it's not because let me put it this way. You can do what you want, and all of the modern translations, the genuine translations as opposed to a paraphrase, are fine for study. I'm not happy with the NIV personally, because in their translation they make decisions about interpretations. And I don't think they always get it right, okay? So, for example, sarx, the Greek word sarx, it's translated flesh, but flesh could mean the fallen self, the tendencies of the flesh, so to speak, or it could refer to just being human. Flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. That means just our mere humanity. I use this as an example because in the New American Standard, sarx is always translated flesh. But in the NIV, it might be translated something like human nature, where they think it means that in the context, or they might say fallen human nature, when they think that's what's being referred to. So I don't want the translator to make those decisions for me. I just want them to translate sarx into flesh and then let me decide, given the context, which way it goes. And there's a number of cases where I don't think that the NIV gets it right, and so I just would rather not be instructed by the translation. Study notes, that's one thing, but not in the translation. I favor either the New American Standard or the ESV. And the ESV is a more recent translation, but both are very solid, high-quality translations, and the ESV is probably a little easier to read than many people think the NASB, New American Standard Bible, is a little wooden in its translation. I've been reading it for almost half a century, and I love it. But here's the deal. I think whatever you choose, just choose one translation. If you're into the NIV, all right, and this is what you've been using, you're familiar with the wording of your favorite passages, don't change. Get a good translation and stick with it the rest of your life, because there's a sense of familiarity that you get with the texts, and you remember passages, and you maybe memorize some, or you just remember them from usage. And if you start shifting into different translations, it kind of messes that process of recall and memorizing up a bit. So I'd suggest that you find one and you stick with it. And when you find the one you want to stick with, get a very high-quality leather-bound volume so it's not falling apart on you 5 years from now. You want that to last a long time. You know, it doesn't have to be a big, massive tome, but you just want a quality Bible that you stick with and you're able to make marks in it. Because I had one that fell apart, and I spent the better part of a year reading through the whole new Bible and transferring my marks from the pages of 66 books of the Bible. You know what I'm saying? That was crazy. So anyway, that would be my advice. Now, as far as more in-depth study, this is where there are a couple of different resources. The MacArthur Study Bible is an example. I'm not sure what the translation is for the MacArthur Study Bible. It might be the New King
James. NASB.
Oh, it is the NASB. Okay, well, then that would be an easy one for me. I think that John MacArthur does use that, right? But see, I have a copy of the New International Version, the one you read, but I have the Zondervan NIV Study Bible. They gave it to me for free. And the study notes are really, really good in the sense that they give me a lot of inside information, and that's what study notes ought to do, give you lots of extra stuff so you can see things that maybe you didn't see before. So I'm in the book of Numbers now. So when I went to my NIV Study Bible, I opened up to Numbers, and I read their preface, their introductory material, and the outline and all that prefatory material, right, for the book of Numbers. Now I've got a little sense of what I'm getting into. And when I start reading the book of Numbers, I already have the ground tilled a little bit with that advanced information that I got from the study Bible. But I'm reading Numbers in the New American Standard, not in the NIV. Okay?
Ah, that makes sense.
So it's I'm reading in my translation, but I'm using their study notes because they gave it to me for free. Now, I'm not recommending that as a study Bible. I just had it, and it's better than nothing, so I like it. And I'm learning some new things, even though I've been around for a while. John MacArthur's study Bible is like that too, but you're getting MacArthur's stuff. So keep in mind what you're getting is John MacArthur's own theology. And so you're going to get a more, I'm trying to think of the right word that's not a negative word. It's a more sectarian, not sectarianism. You get a more parochial, you're getting John MacArthur's theology, okay, instead of a range of different people who are just giving you background information. And I'm not saying it's bad. I don't agree with everything John MacArthur teaches, but I think he's a really good teacher. So that could be okay for you. But you could, if you have one, you could use it the same way that I suggested using the way I'm using the NIV. I'll tell you something else that I do, and this is kind of first steps. None of these recommendations are one that are going to drive you deep, 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 deep. Okay, so let's just take this in stages. For the next couple of years, just read through your Bible with your study Bible. You're going to get more information. Okay, then you can go deeper if you want to. Or individual books, you might buy a book about it, you know, like the book of Romans, for example. And there are different writers who've written books about Romans. John Stott, for example, The Cross of Christ, you know. And these are ways that you can get more in-depth information if you want. But as a steady diet, I'm suggesting maybe get a study Bible and follow the notes there to get deeper in. But there's one other thing I'd recommend, and I just started doing it this year. You can go online to YouTube and type in the Bible Project. You ever hear of them? The Bible Project?
I have, and I love it. Before I read a book, I will watch that, and then I have the Zondervan NIV study notes, just like you. I read that, and then I have read the NIV. And so I'm kind of, that's how I'm working my way through it.
Oh, well, you're great.
Really helpful.
Well, super. So, I mean, basically I'm recommending for you to do things that you're already doing at this point, right?
Well, yeah, and I mean, but that's okay. It actually helps me to know that I'm on the right track.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm going to switch to NASB and then just stick to that because
yeah.
I don't like hearing like I did notice in my King James version it would refer to faith in certain passages as faith almost like a possession of Christ versus faith possessed by a follower of Christ,
uh-huh.
And it confused me, and I got into this whole Arminian versus Calvinist. I guess I'm a Calvinist, way between, and I stuff like that.
Sure,
it doesn't freak me out by any means because I think we're going to learn a lot when we, you know, when we're with Jesus,
sure,
and
of
we're
going to
realize we got a lot wrong.
And no matter which tool that you use, there are going to be questions like that that come up. And I got question marks all over my Bible, you know. I always use a number 2 Ticonderoga, and I got a little pencil sharpener right next to my chair where I sit and read and keep it sharp, and I make little notes. And here I got it. I'm just open to Isaiah 51. I got the word Messiah there and a question mark. Is that what they're talking about? I mean, I just happened to turn it there. There's a question. I got question marks all over. Here's another one. I just flipped another page, Jeremiah 31. Question mark. So it's okay to have questions and uncertainties, but the more you read and the more you reflect, the better things will get. And I'll just tell you this. This is going to be very, very basic, and it'll sound like I'm a broken record. But if you practice the principle, never read a Bible verse. If you are conscious of the flow of thought, you are going to get a lot more out of the text than most readers who aren't paying attention to that. I haven't used commentaries as a steady thing for me, only in special occasions, because I'm just paying attention to the flow of thought and I'm still getting a lot out of it. I'm not saying they're not valuable. They are. But and probably if I more of the, I'd have fewer question marks if I used some commentaries regarding these things. But I think the things that you're doing right now are a great way to get a good foundation. You're reading through Scripture. You've got some insight coming from a study Bible. You're watching this overview stuff from the Bible Project guys. One little thought, though. One of the guys on Bible Project sounds like he is personally drifting progressive. So I have not seen anything on their material when I'm watching Bible Project animations there, when they're summing up a book, that wonderful way they do, that has given me pause. But I have heard some things that one of those guys has said that bothers me, concerns me. So just keep your antenna up with regards to that, especially the older stuff they do. They do some new stuff too, but where they have the drawings, you know, you see the drawings drawn out as they're working through the sections of the book. Those, I think, are fabulous, and I think they give a really, really good overview of the book. So I tip my hat to them for that effort.
Well, thank you, and I just want to declare blessings not only over you, but your whole staff, and also your children and future generations, because you've blessed me and my family, and I'm just so grateful for you.
Wow. Well, Len, that is one of the sweetest things I've heard here on the air. It's so nice of you. And we take it all, the team, my family, and the future generations. I'm just claiming it for them, because you're one of those future generations. So is your children, you know. So I'm so glad to be part of that whole process with you.
Yeah, I've got two daughters. One's 14 and one's 12. So I think we have something in common.
Yes, we do. Oh, man, my heart goes out to you, brother. Hang in there, man.
Thank you.
Just be gentle and be consistent, okay?
Thank you so much. I'll let you get to the next caller.
All right. I appreciate your call, Len. All the best to you, brother.
God bless you, Greg.
Thank you. Bye. Oh, let's see. That was so sweet. I'm looking at the clock. Maybe we'll just skip the break and go right in, okay? Because I'll give poor Laura the short shrift if I go to break now. Laura in Michigan, welcome to the show. Hi.
Hi, Mr. Kokol. How are you?
I'm doing good. Nice to talk to you.
Can you hear me?
Yes,
pretty well?
Perfectly.
Oh, good. Okay. I thank you for taking my call.
Okay.
And I have, especially since I've been trying to strengthen my convictions and trying to avoid explicit things, I think I've always been bothered by, you know, horror movies that that show everything, and then a lot of swear words, you know, in movies, and then especially, you know, sorry for younger listeners, but, you know, sexual scenes.
Yes.
So I've always been very sensitive to those things. Mm-hmm. But more so now, just because strengthening my convictions and all that.
Yeah.
But I guess my question is, I feel like I'm being very judgmental of others who watch those things and aren't bothered by them.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how. Go ahead.
Well, I'm very sympathetic to your plight because I suffer the same thing. And it is something that we've discovered at Stand to Reason as we've talked to people, that in a certain sense, the more that they learn, and in your case, you're talking about an ethical circumstance on what you're viewing and what's appropriate, but it also, applies to theological concerns where people go deeper in their understanding of God and His plan and the worldview from a Christian perspective and a biblical perspective. And then they go to church and they hear things that trouble them and ought to trouble them. And so it's almost like they've said, well, you've ruined me for going to services, because now I hear these things that are taking things out of context, et cetera, et cetera. And so all I can say is I'm sympathetic to that. I do have an RX or some suggestions for you, but I understand what you're talking about. And there are two things that are important. One of them is that we give priority to the truth in our lives and good conduct and wise behavior, which is what you're talking about here with films. And it's not just the, you know, the explicit sexual stuff that might be problematic. My girls will sometimes say, well, I've already seen that movie. There's no bad words in it, Dad. And I say, well, honey, I honestly don't care that much about the bad words. I care about the bad ideas much more.
Right.
And you can't see the bad ideas like I can see them, you know, and so they're not able to judge that. But when you are more used to assessing these kinds of things, you get better at it. These things jump right out at you, and they're so obvious. And so it's easy then when you're with friends who are watching something to be thinking, how can they watch this and be laughing at those jokes and be carrying on and putting all of that garbage into their mind?
Right.
I understand that. And it is a judgment. There's no question. But not all judgments are wrong. The concern is that you not become condescending or unkind in your judgment. And that's the kind of thing that Jesus was warning against in Matthew 7. You know, judge not lest you be judged, because the same measure that you judge on others, it's going to be judged on you. And if you got a speck in your eye, don't look at the speck in somebody else's eye. Deal with the log in your own eye first. Then you will be able, interesting how he puts that, to deal with the speck in somebody else's. So he's not proscribing all judgment. And in fact, there are other passages that say judgment is appropriate and it's right. He is warning against a certain type of judgment. And this is where, on the one hand, we want to be alert for and campaign for truth and wisdom and good moral behavior. On the other hand, we have to be charitable to our brothers and sisters, and you know, weigh our words, and make a decision in any given circumstance whether it's appropriate to bring anything up. Lots of times, it's not going to be appropriate to bring it up, but sometimes it may be appropriate in a private conversation or something when you're talking about the viewing habits of someone. I find even in my own home, my wife and I have different sensibilities about some of these things, you know, so that's just something you're going to have to work out. And I have to keep telling myself, you know, reminding myself not to be stern, but to be firm when necessary. And sometimes you just kind of let things slide. The thing is, you don't want to become a movie Nazi or a TV Nazi or whatever. You don't want to come across like that. And so that's where there is no magic formula here on this one, Laura. This is where what we try to do is assess things accurately and in a balanced way, okay? And and then try to offer advice or encouragement or nothing at all, instead of being just appearing as this person who's always crabbing about something.
Right.
See, that's my problem. Right. I just have to, there is so much to crab about. That's the deal.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a grabby person, there's lots of good material out there. So I tend to be a little crabby and critical. Now, what's really cool is I find a way to make a living at it. Right. What's wrong?
Send you my resume then.
Yeah. So you find out what's wrong with things and ideas, and you hopefully try to correct it. But there's always the darker side of that, where you come across as kind of a harsh, nasty, critical person, and that's not what God wants of us.
Yeah, and that's what brought this up. Actually, I was listening to the latest podcast from Babylon Bee, which is actually where I heard about you.
Which podcast was it, did you say?
Babylon Bee.
Oh, Babylon Bee. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always had fun with those guys.
Oh, yeah, they're funny. And they had a bishop on, and he was talking about that as Christians, we shouldn't be trying to say, like, oh, I'll never watch any of that stuff. He goes, we should have wisdom and be able to watch those things and discern. And to me, I'm like, if that isn't the problem, it's filling your mind with those images and those thoughts and ideas. I guess I just don't want to get numb to it.
Yes.
And then other people too, are they wrong for not being more sensitive. That's what I struggle with.
Well,
it might be
that they're not wise in the circumstances, you know, and hopefully as a person matures in Christ, they get more sensitive to those things, more wise. I just found for myself, there's a lot of stuff I just don't want to watch. It's just not appealing to me anymore. I really like good drama. There was a great, what was the movie? It was a movie about Jimmy Hoffa. Okay. And the guy played Jimmy Hoffa was, Robert De Niro was in it. The other full-bore, high-octane actor, Al Pacino, okay? Oh, man, what a combination. And I started watching this, and it was electrifying to watch these two guys on the screen together interacting. It was Joe Pesci was in it as well. I was really enjoying that element of it, but I knew it was going to get ugly. And I knew in terms of violence and in the harshness and all that, and I just said, I turned it off. I was enjoying the movie from one perspective, but I was realizing, this is not good for my soul. You know, it's like watching Goodfellas. You know, Goodfellas is another one that's kind of like that. Some of the same actors, too. And it's a great drama. Well acted, well written, well directed, unbelievable. But it because it's so good, it has a more powerful impact for sullying one's soul. And that's why, I'm just not going to watch Goodfellas. You know, I'm not going to watch this other movie. I turned it off, Hoffa. I think it's called Hoffa. So, that's just, and hopefully if people get more sensitive to those things in a proper and appropriate way, they don't get more critical and judgmental, but they begin to either make some changes in their own life and also offer some encouragement to others in appropriate ways. But this is a hard one.
Yeah, I think I need to just be more conscious of not being critical, but being showing in my actions that why I don't like the, I don't know how to explain that, but showing how it affects me
right.
So they recognize maybe it would affect them. But I just wanted to see what your thoughts were. I think you had mentioned it before in other podcasts about, you don't want to, don't read something that you know is going to stick with you and,
Laura,
don't
I gotta
need all the details.
I gotta run, Laura. Here comes my music. So, thank you for the call. I hope it was helpful. It's good chatting with you there in Michigan. And that's it for this show, friends. All right, Greg Kokel here for Stand to Reason. You go out and give them heaven. All right, bye bye now.